that is some of the news for Tuesday, October 23, 2001. Tonight's news was engineered by Mark Leosa and produced with Andrea Sears, Ginger Otis, John Hess, and Prisoner X. Thank you for listening. I'm Jose Santiago in New York for the WBAI Listener Sponsored News.
Rebroadcast of tonight's evening news this evening at 11 p.m. It's currently 7 p.m., and this is not Mike Levine, and I am not an expert witness. This is Emmanuel Goldstein. I'm usually here an hour from now, but we're turning the clocks back tonight because it's a special fundraising edition of Off the Hook. Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. We're here with you for a three-hour special fundraising edition. We must do this occasionally to keep the radio station going, to keep the... just keep things where they are as far as a 50,000-watt radio station in the middle of the FM dial in New York City that can bring you programs like this and all the other ones that you hear throughout the week. We'll have all kinds of special offers and deals and things like that for you. First, let me introduce a couple of people. Laszlo's here. Laszlo, you know, you always seem to be here when we're asking for money.
But that's because I can talk about the other side.
Yeah, you've been to the other side and back. Amazing. And, of course, Mike is here, as always.
I'm here.
How you doing?
I'm all right.
How's life up north at Columbia University?
We're very far north.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Uh-huh. Is it really?
Yeah.
Never heard it described quite that way before. And Chris joins us.
Good evening.
How you doing?
Very good.
It's been a while since you've been here, actually.
Yeah. It goes back to the brain damage days.
Yeah, Chris, one of my old broadcasting partners from way back at the other radio station on Long Island. Boy, those were the days, weren't they?
Oh, yeah.
Almost anything went on that radio station. In fact, to this day, almost anything goes over there.
Still does.
It's really something. We have a couple of special guests. Well, one special guest will be joining us along with Bernie S. in a moment. But I just wanted to... have this opportunity to give people a chance to say whatever is on their minds for the 3 hours ahead, I guess. I haven't talked to at least a couple of you since events of last month, at least not on the radio. And any thoughts or things you guys want to say?
I got back from North Carolina a couple weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
There was very angry people in the South about this whole deal.
Really?
Yeah, they're angry, and it's on their marquees. When you go by stores, it says, punish the guilty, bait 50% off. And God bless America, T-shirts, 3 for $10.
Now, have the prices for shirts come down? I mean, are people donating the manufacturer of shirts, or is it just pretty much they're selling them for the usual price? I mean, I was just curious about that. I see people selling American flags on the street, and I'm wondering, are they selling them for a cost, or are they making a profit off of this?
I think they're making a profit. I was at a lumber yard today where a guy walked in and was selling posters of the Twin Towers. $3.
Okay, well, you know, whatever. We've seen a lot of the good, a lot of the bad, and some of what we're going to be talking about tonight is where it's all going. Already we've seen it going into some very disturbing and dark places, and I fear it's going to be going into even darker places before we're done, if we ever actually manage to get finished. A couple of thanks that we want to give out to area merchants, Cafe Water, 130 Water Street in New York. And Texas Rotisserie and Grill, 94 Fulton Street, for donating sustenance to the many volunteers who are here donating their time to answer the phones. Our phone number for donations, we'll be giving out the information as to what precisely you can get if you donate to us. The phone number is 212-968-0500. Now, if you're out there and you just know that you want to give something to us and you don't care what you get in return, which I guess is probably the best type of person that's out there, then do give that number a call right now, 212-968-0500. Otherwise, stay tuned and listen to some of the things we bring you in the 3 hours ahead. And if that doesn't convince you to call in and pledge and keep this place going, I don't know what can.
You know, they say a lot of not-for-profits are in big trouble these days because everybody's funneling their money to the World Trade Center funds.
Well, I don't want to make it seem like we're in competition with something like that, but
I know, but it seems like there should be a balance.
I would hope people would just look into themselves a little bit more and realize what kinds of things are important and valuable. And I hope that non-commercial radio where you can think, where you can talk, where you can express yourself, I would hope that's something that is considered valuable enough to support. And certainly there are a lot of other things out there that are valuable and important and need to be supported as well. And then there are a lot of crass commercial things that we waste all our time and money on, which hopefully we can take a good look at now and say, boy, that's a waste of time. You know, there's a limited number of sincere things that you can contribute to, and I think this program here is one of them. So again, you agree, Chris?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought maybe you were objecting to that. All right. Good. 212-968-0500 is the number to call. I don't know if the little switchboard here actually works and lights up, so I can't tell for sure if calls are coming in. I'm not going to have that annoying phone ringing in the background thing. I hate that. It reminds me of Channel 13. So do give us a call, 212-968-0500. We'll be back in a moment with our special guest. And we're back. Program is off the hook. And Laszlo, what is that you're playing with over there?
This is a VR500. I'm trying to tune in the Taliban. No, I've got a list of their frequencies here, but I think they're off the air.
You're getting some serious interference there.
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
All right, well,
that's Bernie about this.
That's Bernie happens to be joining us right now on the telephone. Bernie, are you with us?
Yes, from the city of brotherly love, Philadelphia.
Philadelphia. Laszlo is playing with a scanner. I'm not sure if it's even an authorized scanner. It might be one of those unauthorized ones. But
we won't touch on that part.
No, we won't touch on that part. But I have a scanner too. In fact, the theme of this first hour is pretty much radio, not the AM/FM type of radio, but the radio you get in other types of places. That includes scanners, and that includes a phenomenon known as shortwave radio. And with us on the line is publisher of a terrific book, Passport to World Band Radio, which is something that is a must for anybody at all interested in the shortwave spectrum. And if you have no idea what the shortwave spectrum is, what it's all about, what you can hear on shortwave, don't worry. We'll explain all that to you. Larry Magna joins us from, I don't know where he is. I think he's in Pennsylvania somewhere. Larry, you there?
Yes, I am, Emmanuel. Hi.
How you doing?
We're doing just very well. We're in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, between New York and Philadelphia.
Oh, okay.
And the countryside. And we are here in one piece.
Now, tell us something about, first of all, shortwave in general. Maybe both you and Bernie can trade information on this. But basically, for somebody who has never picked up a shortwave radio in their lives, what's out there for them?
It's like AM and FM, except it goes long haul. It consists mostly of what we would consider to be public broadcasters. That is, they're government broadcasters or NGO, non-government type, non-profit organizations. And some also are private, and most do not have ads. They have news, they have music, they have entertainment, propaganda, religion, politics, you name it. It's kind of like the world's gathering spot for ideas.
Uh-huh. And how far do the signals actually wind up going?
The signals, it depends on the time of day and all kinds of other considerations, but they go global. You can pick up a signal from halfway across the world, just like you can pick up a signal from maybe, a few states away.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are transmitters in the United States as well.
Now, give us an idea of the kinds of things that you could hear. I mean, would most of these broadcasts be in different languages?
Most of them are in languages other than English. But then on the other hand, there's something like, I think we counted once, 20,000 or some such entries in our database. There are so many stations on the air that even if you pick up only a small fraction of them in English, the number is still quite large. But the main thing is the sense of being directly connected. You don't have any wires. You don't have any gatekeepers. There's no one along the way to filter or edit what you get. The signals bounce off a gaseous layer around the Earth called the ionosphere, and this is like a dribbled basketball. It goes down off the Earth or the oceans, back up, hits this invisible gaseous layer, and bounces back down until it reaches your radio. So it goes quite a great distance that way. And as a result, there's no one between you and the person trying to reach you. And that's really its secret. It gets through. It gets through whether it's jammed. It gets through whether someone doesn't want it to get into the borders. There's really no regulation. So you get unfiltered, uncensored news and ideas.
Well, now, there is jamming that goes on. How effective is that jamming?
Jamming has gone on since the first shortwave transmitter went on, I think. It goes back to the 30s. And the Comintern jammed the Nazis jammed the Comintern, and so forth. It's been this way now for years and years. The beauty of shortwave is, yes, there's a certain efficacy of jamming, but because of the nature of the radio waves, they're scattered all over. It's very hard, for technical reasons, for jammers to work except in limited circumstances. During the Soviet era, there were quite a number of transmitters operated by the KGB and also in Eastern Europe. The transmitters that were actually in cities operated fairly well. But once you got out to the countryside or the suburbs, they were only marginally effective. The result is that the Cold War, when you talk to people who were involved in the labor and resistance movement during the 40s and 50s and 60s, most of these people will tell you that the decisive factor wasn't the armaments or the military. It was what they got over the air. For example, the Voice of America used to have Willis Conover with his jazz show. Willis Conover lived in Maryland, and in his own neighborhood, he was considered to be something of a nobody. People wouldn't invite him to the local parties and things because they didn't think he was amounting to anything. But when Willis went to Eastern Europe, throngs of people would turn out for him more than they would for heads of state, and they would strew flowers in his path. He was considered to be almost like nobility would be in Thailand or in England. And it was just remarkable. That one jazz show probably did as much to end the Cold War as anything else. And, of course, it was on shortwave.
Now, a lot of people in the United States, which is where the bulk of our listeners are, have not heard shortwave. They don't listen to shortwave on a regular basis. They miss out on all these things, these references that you're making. Voice of America, I bet many of our listeners have never even heard Voice of America. Why do you think that is? Why do you think Americans, as a rule, have not taken such an interest in shortwave as the rest of the world has?
Well, we're a free country. We have so many media from which to choose that it's not the same thing as, for example, in Afghanistan. In Afghanistan, over 80% of the adult males listen to shortwave. Why? Because they can't trust the Taliban media. So there is a difference. Here it's a voluntary act. In most other countries, it's an act of desperation. But there is a surprisingly large number of people listening here, and what surprised even me is the growth in recent times. We expected webcasting and things of this nature to pick up the slack. What we found is that world band or shortwave listening has grown faster and reached a higher plateau than webcasting, which really surprised us because we have books in both fields, or we had books in both fields. We have still have books in shortwave. We were really taken aback. It seems that people like that sense of directness. You're connected straight through, and also you can surf. Like you surf on TV, but you can surf very nicely on shortwave. There are literally hundreds of channels, and each one at a different time might have something different. This channel might have something from, you know, in the morning, you come back later in the afternoon, that same channel has somebody else. So it's a bit of a fishing expedition, and people really seem to enjoy it. Not so much for pleasure, but for the sense of being connected directly to a variety of cultures worldwide.
Now, you mentioned that that there are more shortwave listeners now than ever before. How does that relate to what the BBC did recently as far as North American broadcasts, where they curtailed them and used the reason that that there are more people listening on the Internet now, so they don't need to use shortwave to get to us?
Well, if you get to the reasons behind it, I think you get involved with personalities, careers, ambitions, and so forth at the BBC. I don't think there's any question but that if they could gracefully change that situation, they would. By now, so many people have staked certain people in particular have staked their careers on this, that it would be hard to withdraw. But I wouldn't be surprised if it comes back, because what they're finding is that the things they said were the waves of the future are not going anywhere. The local relays that they carry are very fine and well, but they only carry certain newscasts, often only a few minutes worth. On shortwave, you pick them up 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and you pick up not only bits of newscast, but you get in-depth news analysis, you get plays, drama, you get comedy, you get all kinds of things, sports. Similarly, on the web, it's a wonderful medium if you need something like music that's fairly consistent. The problem with the web is that, unlike regular broadcast, the more listeners you have, the higher the cost, and the more likely there is to be interference with your signal, because the backbones and the servers get clogged up, your packet time increases, and finally, of course, there's just total congestion. So during a news event, such as what happened recently in New York, when people went to news sites for webcasts, more often than not, they got nowhere because everything was congested. On the other hand, if you turn on a shortwave radio, it doesn't matter with AM, FM, shortwave, any kind of over-the-air radio, whether you have one listener or 1 million. So for news, regular radio has turned out to be more appropriate than webcasting. On the other hand, for music, webcasting, I think, is more appropriate than shortwave.
Now, you think that BBC is actually going to restore the service to North America at some point? Do they still have the frequencies to do this?
They've lost a number of their frequencies. That's a very good point. We do know that quiet inquiries were made by some of their people to see if the frequencies were still available. They were quite miffed that they weren't. But I think we're dealing with some very, very bureaucratic considerations here, that egos have been put on the line. It gets into that kind of thing more than the logic behind it. I think it comes down to this, that people, including us at one time, saw the future one way. The future has turned out to be a great deal more old technology than we thought it would be. We hung our hat on that to some extent, and we found it wasn't true. They hung their hat on it, and I think they're finding it's not true. And the question is, what do you do once you've made these statements about where you're going? And there becomes a face-saving thing. So whether they go back or they don't go back, I can't be sure. But I do know this. The nature of shortwave is such that even though they don't beam directly to North America, they have relay transmitters in the Caribbean. And those transmitters put out a signal that gets into North America almost as well as it did before. So real world, people are still listening in huge numbers to the BBC in North America on shortwave.
I think one of the frequencies is 5975.
That's correct.
Yeah, I picked that up. In fact, last week, actually about 2 weeks ago, myself and a friend went on a drive through New Brunswick, Newfoundland. We passed a huge shortwave station, I think somewhere in New Brunswick on the highway. You probably know which one it is.
That's correct. That's Radio Canada International. That's the Sackville, New Brunswick site.
That's exactly what it was. And I was amazed by how vast the expanse was. There are antennas everywhere. I guess to broadcast via shortwave, it's not the same thing as just putting up a tower.
Well, you can just put up a tower. There are small stations in Latin America and Africa that operate domestic services, like your station, for example, on shortwave, and they just have a little tower or a 50 or 100-foot piece of wire. But they don't get very far.
Mm-hmm.
But if you wish to broadcast with a high power signal halfway across the world, yes, you have these huge antennas that are directional. They take what is already a powerful transmitter signal and they focus it on one part of the world. But again, what's interesting is that these signals, even though they're focused on one part of the world, do reach many other parts of the world. It's just that they're not quite as strong. So, for example, the Voice of America you mentioned earlier, that has been mandated by Congress since its inception not to broadcast to North Americans or to Americans. It's an odd situation. It's supposed to be an objective broadcaster, and yet the reason it's not supposed to broadcast to Americans is that they don't want government propaganda reaching our ears. However, all this is for naught. Only in Washington can you come up with a law like that. It doesn't mean anything because shortwave scatters all over the world. And you can hear the Voice of America anywhere in the United States just as well as if you were in Europe or Africa.
Now, when you say that it's mandated that Voice of America not be broadcast to the United States, does that mean you're breaking some kind of law when you listen?
Oh, no, no. It's just one of those foolish laws like, horses can't walk in the left lane on Sundays or something. We're full of laws that mean nothing, and this is one of them. The law applies to the broadcaster. It applies to the Voice of America. But since there's no way that physics can be changed, regardless of what politicians may dictate, they beam the transmissions. The antennas are beamed to different parts of the world. But still, the signal gets to our antennas, so we can hear them.
It's often interesting to listen to Voice of America as they're beaming to other parts of the world to hear what they're saying to those other parts of the world.
And we should. We're paying for it. Mm-hmm. We should know what they're up to. And when you read things in the paper, should the Voice of America do this, do that, granted, most people listen to the English broadcasts, but for those who are multilingual, of course, they can listen to the other broadcasts as well. And it's quite instructive. For example, although I haven't seen anything in the media about it, I'm quite surprised that Afghan refugees living in California complained to Representative Royce, who's in Congress, that the Voice of America broadcast sounded as though they were pro-Taliban. Well, not many people speak those languages, so it was checked out, and as I'm told from people in Washington, they found it was true. They had pro-Taliban people intensely involved in the Voice of America broadcast, which is obviously rather embarrassing, and they're trying to find replacements, but not many people speak those languages. But the point is that because Americans had shortwave radios and they spoke those unusual languages, that they were able to monitor it and find something going on that was really quite harmful to the country.
Mm-hmm. It seems like a real primary source of information that's not filtered through other news agencies. I know there's controversy now about people in the United States being able to hear things directly from Osama bin Laden, but if he was to broadcast something over shortwave, there'd be nobody who could stand in the way and say, well, you can't hear this, or this has to be edited before you can hear it. It seems like shortwave is a much more effective way for various groups, good or bad, to communicate around the world.
That's correct, and for whatever reason, the Taliban has chosen not to do this because at present they're using a Middle Eastern television service, which means that if people are going to watch it here, they, except for a few people who have exotic dishes, they have to go through ABC and the other networks. Well, the White House has put pressure on them not to put this through uncensored. So if you were looking for uncensored news of that sort, yes, it could come through on shortwave, and there's nothing anybody could do about it. However, the Taliban has not done that, at least as of yet, and as far as I know, they have no plans to.
Bernie, yes, let me bring you in for a second. Tell us some of the interesting things you've heard on shortwave over the years.
Wow. Emmanuel, I think that opened up my eyes to the world back when I was, I think I was 14, a few years ago anyway. You know, this is before the internet was really in existence and available to the average person, including myself back then. And there was just no. I lived in a very rural area at that time in my life. I was miles from the nearest paved road, and there was no radio, no local radio station. There wasn't a radio station within 20 or 30 miles from my home. And so I ran into somebody who had an old shortwave radio and bought it from him and was just amazed at the diversity of programming that I could hear. And I was glued to that thing for the next few years. Didn't have much of a social life, and I couldn't go anywhere, but I learned an awful lot about different countries and their cultures, and it was just an amazing thing. And this was really, you know, this catchphrase, this information superhighway that we all seem to dislike, that really described shortwave years prior to the internet being available to the common person. So I still make use of shortwave on a regular basis. In fact, I recently picked up a shortwave radio that we were discussing last week on the show that I can put in a car. And it doesn't cost any more than a regular car stereo. It's like $100-some.
Now, did those radios arrive?
I'm sorry?
Did those radios arrive?
They have, and you'll be getting yours soon.
Okay.
And I think Mr. Flash will be getting his soon as well.
Excellent. So this is an actual car radio that you can plug into your car and listen to shortwave radio as you're driving around, which is the coolest thing.
It looks like a regular Sony car stereo, but it mounts in where any car stereo would mount. But in addition to AM, FM, and a cassette, it receives most of the international shortwave bands. I'm curious, and maybe Larry would have some comment on this, why this particular... You might be familiar with it, Larry. I don't know. It's the Sony CA620X.
Yeah, it's the same electronics as the one we tested in Passport 2001.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think that Sony has not sought FCC certification to be able to sell that radio in this country? They can't legally sell that radio in this country, isn't that right?
That's correct, but the reason is fairly simple. There's no market. Philips came in with a very nice radio about 7 or 8 years ago. I had a huge ad budget and promotional budget, even got a feature in Playboy. It's a good radio. There was nothing wrong at all with it. They tried and tried and tried, and they couldn't give away those radios. Becker tried the same thing. They, of course, are a German company that make the radios for Mercedes-Benz. They tried the same thing because there was a fellow in Long Island who was certain that, notwithstanding Philip's experience, that with a little enthusiasm, any mountain could be climbed. And so anyway, he set up an operation strictly for this, and of course it went belly up too. Sony knows the numbers. They're a big company. They want thousands of radios to be sold. You have to remember that every year they sell in this country about 1.3 million shortwave portables. I just talked to the CEO of Grundig the other day, and he tells me that the numbers are fourfold. I talked to Universal Radio the other day, same thing, roughly fourfold increase. So I don't know that this is going to mean a long-term selling rate of around 5 million radios per year, but it's a huge number. Meanwhile, the car radios were doing something like 1,000, 2,000 units per year. So the market's just not there. It's not worth their time to put it in the line. But for those of us who are a little off the wall and want it anyway, you get it from Dubai.
What we did.
Now, there's one thing that I think the market is there for, and that's for the book that you published, Passport to World Band Radio. Do you see quite interest in that these days?
It did very well through the late 80s and early 90s, and then with the end of the Cold War, unsurprisingly, it slowly, just like the entire market, slipped as people took essentially a 10-year vacation from Cold Wars, Hot Wars, and all the rest, and it was well-earned. Now that 9/11 has fallen upon us, we're back in the old mode, and needless to say, the book is picked up again. And the same thing, of course, is true with the radio. So it's just an overall interest in getting involved once again in international affairs. The reason, of course, is wrong, but the outcome in that sense is positive, which is, you know, proof that even the worst things can have some benefits. We are once again thinking of other cultures, other people, and that means all kinds of international communications, which includes shortwave.
Now, let me tell you something about this book. You being the listeners, obviously, you know all about the book you published. This is Passport to World Band Radio, and it's one of the premiums that we're offering tonight for callers who call us at 212-968-0500. For a pledge of $75, you'll get a copy of this book, which is the most, as far as I'm concerned, the most amazing book ever on shortwave. The reason for that is because it tells you everything for every frequency. Like, you just go, I'll pick a frequency at random right now, 9,635 kilohertz, and you'll see that frequency is shared by Chile, Guam, Turkey, United Kingdom, and the USA. And underneath each of those countries is information on those particular broadcasters, what time you can get that particular signal, what language the signal will be in, how powerful the signal is, and other information as well, such as exactly where the transmitter is. It's the most incredible resource that I can describe as far as shortwave goes. 212-968-0500. Please call to receive this as a premium for WBAI fundraiser. Let me ask you, Larry, how do you put this together? I mean, it's an incredible amount of information, and it's complicated. It's easy to read, but it must be complicated to compile.
Well, that was what we were focusing on from the outset. We used to do work for other publishers, and we found that there were a range of books available, but it was like the elephant parable. One would tell you the tail, and one would tell you the trunk, etc. And second, many of them were fairly oriented to people who were really into the field. They were, I wouldn't say geeks, but maybe geeks before their time. And that's fine. There's a real market for that, but it's fairly small, and it was ignoring, I think, the real growth market, which is among the general public, who wanted to listen for the information and cultural aspects of this, so that they're not really technologically driven. So we tried to take the complex and make it simple. We came up with charts in the back of the book to take information that was really too complicated and obtuse to put in a textual form, and we put it in graphic form. And then we put things that a beginner would need to know, how to get started, what to buy. We test. We have a vast testing team and laboratory for testing every shortwave radio in the market. We test these things and we evaluate them and put out, in effect, a complete buy guide every year along with the rest of the book. Then we put the schedules in a variety of formats by country, and then we have an hour-by-hour section which explains the programs like you would in TV Guide and so forth. So in the end, you've got all you need between two covers, and it's done, A, so it's understandable, and B, so it's complete. In other words, you don't really have to compromise the completeness in order to make it understandable. As a result, the book has kind of taken off nicely. It's been as high as under 100 ranking in Amazon, and other times, you know, much, much lower. But generally speaking, it does quite well, and the major book chains, one of the buyers there called up and said they consider it their silent bestseller, because month in and month out, year in and year out, it doesn't make the top 10, but it hovers there just a little bit below it. And they like that, because the book might make the top 10 for a few weeks, which is nice, but then it's gone. And this book goes on year after year after year.
Also, the information in it, I believe you can use this information no matter where you are in the world, right?
Oh, yes. It's a very international book. Everything is oriented to where you can take it on a trip, and, of course, we sell the book and all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
So it's Shortwave is worldwide. I don't know if we could even make a book that would just for the U.S. I think that would be illusory.
And in addition to the listings, of course, there are all kinds of reviews of all the broadcasters, for one thing. And what else do you cover in a typical edition?
Well, the main two parts are the schedules, which you've mentioned, and what I mentioned a moment ago about testing the radios, because the radios are not like VCRs or CD players, where they're pretty much fungible goods, one just like the other. The radios vary considerably in performance from one to the other, and price is not always the key indication. Or even if there's a difference based on price, the difference might be extremely tiny, but the price might be three times as much. So we run these through hands-on and lab tests from people who have practical, long-term experience. And, of course, we have the lab numbers as well. And from that, we distill some fairly easy-to-understand reviews. We rank them. We give them star ratings. We explain the pros, the cons, and so forth, so that somebody wanting to enter the field who knows nothing about it can buy the book. And this is usually what happens. Somebody's in Barnes & Noble or whatever, and they're browsing, and they see the book. And they open it up, and then they see, well, it explains how to get started, and it has how to get a radio. So the first step for them is to buy the book, which is good, because then they buy a radio that really works and not something that disappoints. And then, of course, once they have the radio and once they know how to use it, then they have the schedules. So that's the formula.
We're speaking with Larry Magna, publisher or editor-in-chief of Passport to World Band Radio, which is an annual guide that gives you a listing of every shortwave radio station that you can possibly receive, as well as detailed information on what broadcasters come, where they come from, where they emanate from, what they say, that kind of thing.
Aren't you giving away copies of this book?
212-968-0500. See, I don't know if the thing over there is an indication of calls, but if it is, that means it's zero calls.
Well, I can tell you the counter up there that shows how much money you've raised in manual is zero.
That's zero, too.
Which means the show is on the brink of bankruptcy.
Yeah, yeah. I might be asked to leave if we don't improve this right away. 212-968-0500. Yes, Bernie?
Emmanuel, I want to get the ball rolling. What are your pledge levels?
Actually, people can pledge any amount.
$1?
You could. It would be kind of...
Can they put it in an envelope, like Mr. Bush said?
You could do things like that, but I wouldn't recommend it. I'd recommend calling up and pledging for real. For a $75 pledge level, you get this book, which I think is a great value because it opened up your eyes. Imagine WBAI times 100 and add the internet into that, and then you have shortwave. You have the diversity of broadcasters from all over the world, all kinds of different perspectives and viewpoints, and nobody's standing in your way telling you, you can't listen to this, you won't hear this. All it takes is how much you want to put into it. And,
well, I'm not one to let people stand in my way, so I'm gonna open the gate here and have the honor of making the first pledge for $75 to WBAI.
Okay, will that be Visa or MasterCard?
Yeah, if you can just read that number, Bernie, over the air.
Do you want me to read it now?
Yeah, go right ahead. No problem.
We're off the air right now, Bernie. If you could just read that aloud.
Yeah, anybody?
Can I use my H2K card?
Yeah, that actually works if people actually try to swipe that card through a card reader.
You know, when we were flying to HAL
2001,
Bernie was taking his H2K card out and trying to hack the phone on the plane.
Yeah, and you wonder why he gets into trouble. 212-968-0500. I'm seeing no activity on the phone lines, and all that tells me is what Larry's been telling us, how Americans don't take an interest in this kind of a thing. I mean,
they have. Let's not be too pessimistic, because they aren't coughing up money right now. One thing that's interesting is after 9/11, and also after the San Francisco earthquake and various other events in this country, people turned to shortwave immediately thereafter. There's a big spike in listening, partly because communications were disrupted, but also because at a time like this, you're not really sure what's being told and not told when you turn on the local station. So
that's for sure.
There was that kind of thing. I think at this point, perhaps, you know, the interest in it may have ebbed, specifically in Manhattan, for obvious reasons. People are trying to move on. But that's one of the interesting things about shortwave, is because it is so much of a news medium and it can be trusted, you get many different angles and perspectives without interference, that during times of crisis, the listenership jumps as much as sevenfold. So I think that's probably part of it. Realistically, right now, there's got to be an awful lot of let's move on in and around Manhattan. And I think, you know, if you approached this maybe 4 weeks ago, it would be one thing, or maybe even 4 months from now, it will be another thing.
One of the things, Emmanuel, that I really enjoy about shortwave listening is that you can get many, especially right after something happens, some newsworthy event happens, you can get different perspectives from different countries in just a few minutes, or, you know, 1 hour's listening. You can tune around and get different perspectives from several different countries. It's particularly interesting when there are two countries on different sides of the same issue. For instance, when I was in college, back in the early 80s, I remember listening to coverage about the Falkland Islands War. Remember, there's two little islands off the coast of Argentina that...
Mm-hmm.
We
knocked over a fruit stand, right?
Something like that. Well, it was great being able to listen very clearly to Radio Argentine in English and the BBC, and having very different reports about who shot whose planes down and how many and that sort of thing. And actually, it makes me wonder about the often well-deserved objectivity of the BBC, since Britain is taking such taking the role that it is in the war here. What about that, Larry? Do you think it's worth getting a lot of different perspectives from different broadcasters when something like this happens?
Oh, absolutely. If you're not interested in perspective, there's no point in getting into shortwave, because that's what it's about. You're getting the elephant parable, but resolved. You don't get the whole elephant plopped in your lap, but you do get all the different pieces, and you can put it together like a puzzle. And you can use your own judgment in putting it together. There's no one there putting it together for you and regurgitating it in one fixed manner that they decide what's going to be important, what's not, what's going to be taken out, what's going to be altered. But in terms of what you can hear, of course, there's many stations in the Middle East. There's Iran. There's a variety of Arab stations. There's Israel, all in English, or many of them in English. As well as the major European broadcasters. You mentioned the BBC, Deutsche Welle is another very good one, Radio Netherlands is another good one, and interestingly, you can pick up, although it's in the Afghan languages, you can pick up the transmissions that the United States is beaming into Afghanistan, and it's requires a rather good radio. It's not something you can pick up on a $30 portable, but any of the radios we get pretty good ratings to in Passport. If your location is pretty good, you've got some luck, it's a weak signal, but you can pick it up on an oddball frequency of 8,700 kilohertz.
I've actually heard that, and I was wondering if those were if that's a feed to the U.S. Broadcast station, which I understand is in an airplane. Is that correct?
That's correct. It's commando solo in the airplane, and it's beamed on the AM band on two frequencies. We are pretty sure it's a feeder on 8,700, because it's too strong to be on an airplane, even though, you know, it's theoretically possible, but in the real world, it's almost certainly not on an airplane. We can't direction find it with complete accuracy, but we've done a few checks, and it looks like it might be on the ground in Uzbekistan. Again, we're not sure, but at this point, that's what it looks like.
And you can hear this in the States.
Yes.
This is so much more interesting than AM or FM radio.
Right.
You can hear all kinds of things.
Yeah, it's there. This is what our tax money, our war effort is about. Mm-hmm. This is the propaganda side of it. We're beaming these broadcasts into Afghanistan, and we're able to pick up the feeder frequency because it's on shortwave. And it's interestingly enough, now this calls for a rather sophisticated radio to pick up. It's not something a $20 or $30 radio can pick up. And yet on the leaflets they're dropping into Afghanistan, where people scarcely have enough money for milk, they put that frequency down. So we haven't quite divined what that's all about, because I'm sure they're not running around with $200 radios in the caves of Afghanistan, but they do have it in their flyers that they drop to the ordinary Afghan peasant.
It's an interesting flyer, too. I guess you've seen this, Emmanuel. Haven't you seen a picture of that flyer?
I've got actually the copy from that flyer. Give me a moment to track it down. Let me give out the phone number, 212-968-0500. Again, we have no calls on the line. I don't think a single call has come in.
Well, but what else are we giving away besides this book? What's mugs? What do we got, T-shirts?
Well, there's all kinds of things that the BAI people can give you as far as tote bags and baseball caps. The one thing is to call, though, and show your support for the radio station, show your support for the radio program. Otherwise, otherwise you're not going to hear programs like this in the future. And that's something that I think there's a vast void in the radio spectrum in the United States where people don't talk about this kind of thing. I mean, there are certainly more controversial things to be talking about, but I think one of the ways that you will be able to find information is to be able to have access to it. And one of the ways to get access to it is to be able to listen to world broadcasters via shortwave. If we don't have the knowledge, if we don't have the information even to go out and get a radio or get a book that tells you how the radios work, we have no hope. We'll never be able to learn anything except, you know, what the top 10 hits are.
To borrow a phrase, I find domestic commercial broadcasting here in the U.S. To be a vast wasteland.
Mm-hmm.
It's just it doesn't matter which city you go to. You're going to hear the same formats, the same music, and the same news from the same few corporations. And it's really nauseating, as I don't have to tell you, Emmanuel. So I listen to shortwave more than I listen to regular domestic AM/FM broadcast, and I find radio very enjoyable for that reason.
Well, you know, there's another side to this too. Not every station that's on the air is representing a government of one sort or another. You also have such stations as Radio for Peace International in Costa Rica, which is the only UN founded station, I believe. It's not a UN station as such, but it was founded and chartered by the UN. It would be, I think, what you would call a social democratic type of station, certain kinship to WBAI, and that represents the voice of liberalism, democratic liberalism in the Americas. It comes from Costa Rica. It's audible throughout the United States. Equally, on the other end of the spectrum, within the United States, there are private shortwave stations. Now, technically, the Federal Communications Commission says that they can only beam outside this country for reasons that's not worth getting into now. However, again, real world, because shortwave is shortwave, you hear them perfectly well throughout the U.S., and in fact, again, real world, that's where their main audience is. Some of these programs are just incredible. I mean, they have people that could only be called fascists. They just, you know, this is programming that we never heard in the old days on AM and FM, and in fact, you never heard even on shortwave, and you know, once the Germans lost World War II. But in the last several years, they've come on the air, and I don't know how they keep going. They broker time on the stations. They sell time to oddball organizations. And they sell this, that, and the other over the air, and apparently enough to pay for the airtime. So, you know, you get a complete spectrum, and well and truly, that is a complete spectrum, all the way from the vestiges of communism, which you can get from Radio Havana and Radio Pyongyang in North Korea, Radio Beijing, to the extent they're still communistic, in China, all the way to what would have to be called neo-fascism that comes over some of the private American broadcasters.
Now, you can actually get North Korea in the United States?
You can. It's not a great catch. You know, these things are going to depend on shortwave. It's not like AM and FM. You just simply flip the switch, and that's one reason we have the book. Yes, you can pick it up. At the right time, in the right conditions, you can pick it up, and it's perfectly readable. It's not a booming signal, but it's surprisingly good, considering they don't have enough money to feed their own people, that they seem to find enough money to broadcast some of the most peculiar propaganda I've come across. It's really the last vestige of the old Stalinist propaganda, you know, good old communist propaganda, if you will. It's pretty well gone because nobody believes it anymore, but yeah, in Pyongyang, it's still comes out.
All right, Laszlo has just returned from a voyage, and he brings back some interesting news. Tell us what you've learned, Laszlo.
There's some fried chicken in the
That's
the
not
kitchen.
What I meant.
people have been calling and giving money.
Okay, great. So we don't actually see the lines lighting up here when they're ringing. I say that's what was getting me. The lines weren't lighting up, and I'm used to the lines lighting up.
Yeah, there's actually about five people back there. Three of those are currently on the phone.
And they're not personal calls.
But no. And yeah. We have father and son duo have put money together.
All right.
James and Josh of Thornwood, New York, have contributed $125.
That's great.
Wow.
That's great. Now, again, the number is 212-968-0500. What we're offering for a $75 pledge, is the latest copy of Passport to World Band Radio, the definitive guide to shortwave. If you have a shortwave radio or if you're looking to get a shortwave radio, this is the book for you because it will tell you everything you need to know about what to buy and also what to listen to and when it's on, what language it'll broadcast in. And it's fascinating. There is nothing that I can remember more vividly than turning on a shortwave radio for the first time and just hearing the many different sounds, the things like interval signals. Something about interval signals that are just magical to me. And what those are, they're musical chimes that are played by every particular country's radio stations as the top of the hour comes up. For instance, Deutsche Welle plays a particular tune over and over and over again until the top of the hour. That way, when you're tuning your radio dial and you hear those chimes, you know you're going to hear Radio Deutsche Welle when the hour strikes. Larry, is there anything you can tell us about interval signals?
Well, you're right. Interval signals used to be a little bit more colorful because there were more of them. In the old days, the transmitters, when they were beaming from one part of the world to the other, the wires that go out to the antennas, they would first have to turn the transmitters off, then some poor fellow would have to scramble out with a wrench or whatever, hope he doesn't get electrocuted, and move the wires from one antenna to the other, and then scurry back, and then they'd turn it back on. And all this stuff took up time. So once they had it on, they would have to fire the transmitters up again. And then they would want the listeners who had simple radios, and many still do, to be able to find where they were. So they would put a distinctive musical signal on. People are sitting here with their little inexpensive radios diddling around trying to find the station, and they would listen for that music. And then when they heard the music, they would stop, knowing that in a few minutes that the station would come on with whatever news or what have you they would offer. Now, the broadcasts are a little bit more sophisticated. The equipment is more sophisticated, so you don't run into it as much. They tend to operate back-to-back on the same frequency and things like that. Some of them do what's called crash starts, which is that they may share a frequency with a kindred broadcaster.
Mm-hmm.
And that broadcast will broadcast right up to 5950 or something, and then it goes off, and the other one comes on within 1 or 2 seconds. Mm-hmm. So there's no interval signal. It's kind of cute. To get the kookaburra bird out of Australia and all
that. Those are my favorites.
Yeah.
What's a good radio to get started with? Something that's not going to cost a ton of money, but somebody out there listening can just go out tomorrow and buy one.
Well, the two powerhouse sellers, because they're very good radios, are not, you know, something you buy and then 6 months later say, oh, I wish I'd bought something better. And yet they don't cost, you know, you don't have to mortgage the house. There's two of them, the Sony ICF-7600GR. Now, don't ask me why they can't give the thing a simple name like Smith or Jones. But they insist on these convoluted names, so I will repeat it. Get your word processors out. I is in Italy, C is in Charlie, F is in Frank, dash, 7600, G is in George, R is in Robert. G is in George, U is in uniform. Okay, and we do this every day. It's a great radio. It's very sophisticated. I don't know how they sell it for $150 street price, but they do. $150, $170, somewhere in there, depending on where you buy it. But it's an incredible, shortwave may have been around for years, but the technology in that radio runs circles around what any other radio, you know, we normal people would think of, AM, FM, whatever. It's got all kinds of gizmos to make the signals quieter and better, and I can't say enough good about it. And for that kind of money, it's great. Now, there's a couple of downsides. One of them is Sony is a huge company, and they plan things out months in advance. So along comes World Trade Center. Everybody goes out and buys shortwave radios, and there are no more of these to be found unless you're very, very lucky. So what do? You turn to the other major manufacturer, which is Grundig. Grundig is a German company. But, ironically, the headquarters for their shortwave operation is in Northern California. And the radios are actually manufactured in China. They're good radios, but they are more simple than those made by Sony. On the other hand, they have slightly better audio quality. They sell for about the same, $150, and there's one called the Yacht Boy 400. And
great little radio. I have one of those myself.
Isn't it, though? It's a very nice, simple radio. Anybody can operate it. It sounds good. The Sony, on the other hand, is more techy. It does more things. It's more sophisticated. And frankly, we think it's a little bit better constructed. It's still like a tank. But they're both excellent radios, and they're both priced around $150. you can get the Grundig because Grundig is a focused company. It concentrates on shortwave. And as a result, when they something comes up like the World Trade Center, their sales jump. They know about it within hours. They're on the telex or whatever to their Chinese plant, and they step up production right away. Within a week or 10 days, they've got production flown in here from Asia to fulfill the demand. So as a result, you can get Grundig radios, but you can't get the Sony radios now because, again, of bureaucracy. But they're both very good, and those are the ones we try to recommend people start off with.
212-968-0500 is our phone number, and that's basically the number to call to learn everything that you can about shortwave by getting the Passport to World Band radio book.
Free!
Well, no, it's free with your contribution. And I should point out now that you're not. This is not some kind of a garage sale or a raffle. You're making a contribution. Let's make no mistake about this. You can get the book for less. Absolutely, you can go onto the website and learn more about it that way. But if you want to contribute to this radio program, to this radio station, what we're asking you to do is make that contribution, and we will send you this as a gift in exchange for your $75 pledge.
How about a 2600 hat or something? Aren't you giving any of that kind of stuff away?
Well, we'll talk later. 212-968-0500 is our phone number. Please, let's load up those lines. Larry Magna, the publisher of Passport to World Band Radio, has been good enough to join us for the last hour or so and talk to us all about shortwave and how the book is published and what kinds of things are in it. But now we need to hear from you. We need to really build up those numbers because they're coming in, but they're not coming in nearly as well as I'd
terrible.
Like them to.
It's $350.
Yeah, our goal was a couple of thousand for this hour, I think.
Right.
And we have done it in the past. We know the listeners are out there, and we know that there's this isn't our usual time slot, although in about 3 minutes it will be.
How many other radio stations in New York have a hacker show?
None as far as I know. They haven't told me if there is one. And I haven't heard shortwave talked about on the radio. I hear shortwave talked about on WPKN in Bridgeport, which is a great station. They have a program called Pass, The World of Radio with Glenn Hauser. Great program. It's been on for years. But you don't hear things like this where we talk about the meaning of shortwave, about what it's all about. And here in New York City, I don't think any other station does that.
If it helps, and to the extent that your listeners have their computers turned on, they can go and look at the table of contents and so forth on the on our website and get back to you. The website is www.passband.com. And there's the table of contents is there, and a couple of the chapters are excerpted. So they can get a sense of what they're getting into, and that might help them, too, because, you know, if you've never heard of this before, and somebody comes through your FM loudspeaker and says, wow, there's this, that, and the other, mm-hmm. It might seem a little alien, but maybe that will help.
I can honestly say that I know I wouldn't be as interested in radio, and I think Bernie can say the same thing, and a bunch of us here in the room can say the same thing. We wouldn't be as interested in radio, and thus maybe we wouldn't be here in this room right now talking to you had we not discovered shortwave radio years ago and played around and listened to things and expanded our minds and realized, hey, there's a world out there, people saying different things in different ways. You know, maybe it's worth listening to. 212-968-0500. We've only got a couple of minutes left for this particular portion of the program, so please, let's see those phone lines really light up. 212-968-0500. For a pledge of $75, you'll get a copy of the Passport to World Band Radio, which will give you everything you need to know about how to start up with shortwave, what to listen to, and what it all means. 212-968-0500.
Bernie gave me my first shortwave radio.
Bernie gave you a
shortwave
radio?
Yeah, and I was listening to it, and for the first time, I listened to Radio Havana, Cuba.
Wow. Isn't that illegal to listen to them?
I don't know, but it was. I was just mesmerized.
Now, they're at 6,000 kilohertz, right?
I don't know. I was turning knobs, and it came in.
Uh-huh. Is that right, Larry? The 6,000?
They, among others, yeah.
That's a great frequency to have. And, when I was driving up to Canada, we were listening to Radio Havana, and it was the most amazing thing. Driving in a car, listening to them, and they were coming in crystal clear.
Actually, that's one of the reasons I got into it myself. I was down in Florida in college, and you could pick up Cuba on the AM band, and it wasn't, you know, it was in Spanish, and that got me interested. And a friend of mine who was a student from Columbia had a shortwave radio, and that was, you know, the beginning of it. But it is a mind-altering and life-changing experience to some extent, because once you start seeing news and entertainment this way, you don't see it the same as you do when you just tune the normal bands.
That's right. We're up to $800. We want to cross 1,000 before we go into the next segment. So please get those phone lines ringing, 212-968-0500.